Hello everyone, this is Don Jurgler, and welcome to the Insuring Cannabis Podcast, a bi-monthly trip into the intersection of two industries that couldn't be more different. Unless you're a real insurance geek, or a plaintiff's lawyer, the idea of bringing up a topic like workers' compensation at, say, your local tavern on a given Friday evening probably isn't a great conversation starter. Yet workers' comp is about as important a topic as there is where it concerns insuring a business's risk. So let's get down to business. There appear to be a few big workers' comp issues in the cannabis sector that we should all be hearing about. It seems some companies are growing so fast that they end up underreporting their payroll for workers' comp purposes, while others, having moved from being an illegal operation to a legitimate one, for example, could just be catching up on the notion that they need to purchase workers' comp. And then there are class codes, the 3- or 4-digit codes that insurance companies use to estimate rates based on the various types of risk they perform. For instance, in cannabis, there are cultivators using codes intended for manufacturers or trimmers for a portion of their risk when they should be using growers for the entirety of the risk. Retail stores are using clerical codes or outside sales for a large portion of their risk when they should be using, well, retail stores. And manufacturers are wrongly using analytical labs as class codes. Is this happening often? You bet. To be sure, let's ask Cameron Ward, Vice President of Commercial Programs for CanGen Insurance Services, LLC, a managing general underwriter exclusively focused on the legal cannabis industry.
In terms of issues as far as class codes go, I mean, in terms of frequency, it's daily. I mean, that's the number one thing me and my team deal with, really clarifying what class codes should be used. And so let's, first off, with new ventures, I mean, it's a question on every single new venture. Unless it's a very, you know, it's a grow, a really simple risk, then it's easy for these agents to find. But let's say it's a multi-state, multi-faceted, fully integrated account with manufacturing, delivery. Class codes are the main topic of discussion. And moving to existing accounts, I would say accounts that we see that have been with other markets that are coming to us, and we look at these accounts and we look at these past policies to see how they were classified, I would say 1 in 4 are misclassified on a prior policy.
Screwing up a class code may sound like a simple paperwork boo-boo or something that could be fixed with a shoulder shrug and an "I didn't know that," but it could be a heck of a hit on a bottom line.
We just came across it actually last week. So we went up against the state fund, you know, which we do on a normal basis, and we lost the state fund. This insured went with the state fund. Unfortunately, the agent that was representing them had reported the wrong class code. They were a grower, which is usually 0035, and they used the 4611 class code, which is usually for packaging, sometimes for manufacturing risk. They'll use the 4611 code, and the rate for 4611 is drastically lower. You're talking 7-8 times lower. For example, I think it's at like 1.5, and the grow codes are usually over 8. So SCIF found out that it was misclassified midterm, and they went from paying about, I think, $15,000 to $20,000 to be paying $100,000 just because the class code was wrong. And so they came to us after the fact, you know, appealing, saying, "Hey, we need to switch midterm. We're not happy with this new rate that SCIF has." And if something like that happens, unfortunately, that's not something we can accept. They need to stay with their current carrier. You know, we're not looking for midterm. But it's just a good example of, hey, you know, it's really important that off the bat, especially with these new insureds, that you get the class code right, because you can drastically impede on their, on, you know, how they're able to move cash around. You know, they're budgeting out insurance for $15,000 and they get, you know, an $85,000 bill that's going to be due probably, you know, it's about halfway through this policy. So they're going to have about $40,000 due quickly. And it's really important, especially in the workers' comp, you're getting these class codes right, because if you're not, you're really putting, you know, your insured's businesses at risk. You know, imagine having to pay $40,000 just, you know, out of the blue, that not something you planned for or budgeted for, and just because you got a simple class code wrong.
It may be a matter of ignorance for some, or a case of skirting the system for a few. Some of these companies are growing so fast, or they're revamping their operations rapidly to adjust to ever-growing and changing market demands, that they just haven't had the time to accurately report the changes in class codes. I asked Josh Larickia, Vice President of Workers' Compensation for Atlas General Insurance Services, LLC, a program administrator that offers a range of insurance solutions, to shed some light on this.
So class codes are definitely a huge issue within the cannabis space just because it is so new. And one of the things we find is that a business may open up doing one thing, but very quickly is growing and adding different elements to their business. So they might start as a dispensary, but then they also add later on growing or maybe manufacturing. And if they're not telling their broker, then that becomes an issue at audit because the carrier doesn't know what they're insuring.
Larickia, like Ward, has no shortage of examples of class code goofs.
So I had an account the other day where it was sent over as a delivery class code, which the rates for a delivery class code are pretty significant. They're high. After asking a few more questions about what the insured was actually doing, I found out that they're really a non-storefront dispensary doing delivery. Big difference, and a huge difference in premium. So it's great to make sure you really understand what the insured's doing.
Curtis Prince is the founder and CEO of Flux Insurance Services, a wholesale brokerage in Folsom, California, focused on the cannabis industry. Prince has seen companies that mess up on workers' comp reporting do more than just run afoul of their insurance carrier or take a hit on premiums. Being on the wrong side of the law can mean fines, or worse.
Most of those operations outside of, say, processors, trimmers, and cultivators are mature. There's a high threshold barrier to entry to get legalized, and there's a lot of oversight in them being able to be open to the public and maintain those licenses. But where you see a big exposure is in the processors and trimmers, cultivators. Because that's not a, 5-day-a-week, 7-day-a-week operation, it's based on the harvest cycle. What will happen is these people will bring in part-time people and pay them under the table, right? So they're paying in cash. And so there's been a number of times where I've had brokers come to me with clients who were doing it that way, knew it was wrong, and wanted to look at getting insurance. And so with that, there's a couple of options. Because of the temporary usage, sometimes they can benefit from outsourcing to farm labor contractors, staffing companies. Sometimes, if it makes sense, they can actually get a standard guaranteed cost policy. But a lot of the times what will happen is because there's not really any oversight and nobody really can draw a conclusion. Case in point, you have an employee, not even an employee, just a part-time, somebody that just comes and he trims the product, gets paid cash, cuts his hand open, gets a gaping wound, gets stitches, whatever it is. Unless that person actually goes to, say, the Department of Insurance or the Department of Labor, they go under the radar. And so this happens right now and consistently happens. There are obviously some dangers in doing that. In fact, recently there was a cultivator in the Salinas area who got caught doing just that. And there was a couple of things that she got booked up for. One was obviously not having workers' compensation insurance. And because she didn't have work comp, she was paying in cash. Because she was paying in cash, she was not paying payroll taxes. So they came after her for tax evasion and not having workers' comp. And I think that this is a recent case. I'm pretty sure that they fined her up to $30,000. I think it's community service about 300 hours. That's just one case. But in that industry, in that segment, it's actually very prevalent. And so the real solution, obviously, is more product, which would be, i.e., farm labor contractors, staffing, and or we also offer what are called PEOs or ASOs, It's kind of like a hybrid between a staffing company and a standard standalone work comp policy, where you get the infrastructure and the economies of scale of a larger company at a fraction of the cost while you run your business. And through that, you can access your insurance products, which is work comp.
Let's face it, for true cannabis aficionados, the draw of this industry is sort of twofold, isn't it? You get to work in a growing business sector with plenty of opportunity to improve one's lot in life, and you can do what you love, which, for the most passionate in this trailblazer industry, means consuming the product.
The work comp space in general, again, every segment in terms of the type of operations is a little bit different, but one underlying theme that exists with all of these operators is the workforce, the talent base, is driven and drawn to working in that environment, primarily because they are users, right? So it creates a very interesting dynamic to where these companies aren't establishing on the front end drug testing policies. And so that creates an inherent risk for employers, because if they're not testing for THC, then they're not testing for other more dangerous drugs, right? And so now you have a population of employees who might be on harder drugs. You don't know anything about it. And because you don't have a drug testing policy in place, even when there is a post-accident, you're not testing for that. And so you're taking on all that liability without physically being able to protect yourself just by instilling a simple drug test policy. That also goes down the road to actually when you actually have a post-accident claim, how are the carriers going to handle that? And now it's up in the air, and each state's different because, again, it's still Schedule I federally illegal drug. And so each state is determining how they're going to address post-accident drug claims and if they're under the influence. The problem with cannabis is the life cycle in terms of how long it stays in your body is so long that it's hard to pinpoint that the usage of cannabis actually triggered a claim. So those are two real big things. Obviously, the dynamic of the demographic of the people that are working for you, more often than not, are consumers. It's equivalent to say if you are a food and beverage distributor, but you drink all day, right? Well, the difference is that there are oversight on that. Obviously, it's hard to get away with being drunk all day. But that's kind of a parallel to what I'm trying to draw to. These people aren't really managed on the front end because of the culture that these companies want to provide and are going to project is that not only are we in the space, but we are advocates of the space and usage of the product in the space, which creates a very interesting dynamic from an employer and from an insurance carrier level, which I see could be a problematic for carriers down the road actually wanting to get into the space without really getting a strong oversight and understanding of how each state is going to actually manage post-accident claims.
I don't want to wrap things up on a downer or be that guy at the bar talking to an empty seat about workers' comp. Larickia has an optimistic view of where workers' comp in the cannabis industry is headed, as he's been seeing more and more companies embrace the importance of workers' comp in just a few short years.
So when we started writing workers' comp back in 2018, it was pretty common to have businesses that were operational that did not have workers' comp. Now that we're a year and a half, almost 2 years into it, we're not seeing that as much. So I think the industry is understanding that there is insurance out there for them and that they have to have it. So I think that has certainly evolved over the last year and a half, 2 years, to where the businesses understand that they have to have it and are going out and getting it.
Well, there you have it. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Insuring Cannabis Podcast. You can find other episodes from this series by visiting insurancejournal.tv. Until next time, I'm Don Jurgler.